Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Welcome to the Midsters Podcast, your podcast for inspiration on being bold and saying yes to making the most of your midlife.
You know, my first introduction to fear was one that was imposed on me by my parents. And I think we all fall into this. It was fear of strangers or fear of doing something that would cause harm, like not jumping off the staircase or you're not running too fast to, you know, to end up skidding and hurting my knees. But that was my first introduction to fear. That's what resonates with me now, even when I think about it.
I think that's really a great observation. I think fear gets imposed on us by the outside. So parents trying to keep us safe.
Right.
Church sometimes. Moral yes. Fear. Right. Our schools. Fear of failure.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this overlay constantly of we have to be afraid of a bad outcome, which I think inhibits us from exploring and going into new realms where we might find a certain amount of satisfaction.
Right. I think fear is interesting. I think there's two sides to the coin. I'll talk about that a little bit in a minute. But also, it does keep us safe. So it's not always a bad thing. For my experience, I think fear is somewhat a good thing. But tell me about your experience with fear and where you see it presents itself in your life.
Yeah, I think you're right. I do think that fear, you know, it's a biological thing, right? I mean, it's how people adapted to being able to keep themselves safe, is
right.
To sort of be aware and to watch the perimeter.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is something natural about it. So it's not necessarily always bad. I think the reason I wanted to explore this topic is because, taken to its extreme, fear becomes its own motivation, but it's a negative motivation. It's something that motivates us to not do things that would otherwise perhaps cause us to grow. It puts a boundary around us. And if we're not conscious of that fear and then think about ways of tackling it and approaching it so that we can maybe minimize the risk, but still have the experience that lies on the other side of it,
mm-hmm.
I think we're depriving ourselves of something really important. So I think in my own life, you know, I really grew up, I've said this before, like I actually am a lot shyer than I present, but I really grew up very conscious of social risk. I didn't necessarily like putting myself out there because I was so afraid of being rejected.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a very common fear. It's something that I overcame by consciously working at it. But there was a lot of rejection along the way because fear isn't necessarily irrational. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're afraid of something because it really will happen.
Right.
But exposing myself to that let me get to a point where I knew I could tolerate it and move past it.
I find that so interesting. You know, fear itself, it presents itself in different ways. And I think that fear for me is almost opposite to how fear you feel fear in your life. Though I do have some of that too. But I would say fear for me shows up in fear of missing out. So it's not really fear of rejection. It's not fear of not failing or of failing, I should say. It is fear of missing out. And a couple of examples that I have, and we talk about career paths a lot, and I could have taken definitely a different career path and moved up a ladder in a different way. But I had so much fear that I was going to miss out on parenting a certain way and being there and feeling those emotions. Fear of missing out in not just in my own personal life, but even when in my career, there were opportunities to do certain things, but I feared missing out on the connection with people, on the emotion that it stirred in me. That led me, it propelled me. Fear has stopped me, like you, in certain ways, because there is rejection, there is failure, there are those things. But for me, it definitely is fear of missing out on certain things. And probably the biggest fear for me in midlife, because we're in this place where we think about it more, is I don't want to fear living half-lived life. I'm not going to do it. And I think that propels me to living a much fuller life. So it's different, right?
Yeah, that's
actually two sides of the coin.
It is. And I hadn't sort of thought of that, but I think that that actually can be a positive motivator in that sense. I was thinking more, I think in midlife, what sometimes happens is that people experience, again, a very natural fear, but that's the fear of change.
Mm-hmm.
Fear of change is a very common thing. We are, as humans, are kind of programmed to want stability and security. And when you're pushing out into the unknown and you don't know what's going to happen, whether it be change in your social circumstances, your marital circumstances, your family circumstances, right, your career, that factor of the unknown can really cause you to halt. And I think in midlife, once we've invested a lot of time into building our identity around those things, around career, around mm-hmm. family, around a friend group, a neighborhood, a marriage, even when it's not functioning well, it can be difficult to change because we're afraid of what might happen. It could be worse.
Because it feels safe where you are.
At least you know it.
Yeah.
The thing you know is it's familiar and in some sense comforting.
True.
And so I think maybe in midlife, it's a good time to sort of stop and reflect on where you are. And if your circumstances aren't all that you think they can be, do you need to change? And is fear of that change holding you back?
Mm-hmm.
But I also like your overlay on it. If things are good, then maybe you can push even further by using the fear of missing something by the end of your life as a motivating factor.
Do you know, I find fear as a fuel.
Mm.
I mean, I think it is. And it is both, right? Fear is a red light, but it's also a green light. And I think if you can find more of the green light in fear, like harness it. Like, I don't know if fear can be harnessed. Do you think it can?
Oh, I think it can. And, you know, my kids and I, we have this thing. We quote movie scenes to each other all the time, or phrases from movies or books. And one of my favorites is actually Harry Potter. There's so many great lines in Harry Potter. But the one that I love the most, and I'm constantly telling my kids this, is, you know, fear of the name increases fear of the thing itself.
Mm.
If you can't name your fear and grapple with it and see it for what it is, you actually become more afraid. And so one way of sort of overcoming a fear that might be restricting you, or identifying a fear that might be fuel to propel you forward, mm-hmm. is to spend some time sitting with it and sitting with your own thoughts and evaluating them. What am I really feeling in this moment?
Right.
If I'm feeling uncomfortable, what is that discomfort? What can I name it? Is it fear? And if it's fear, what is it fear of? Is it fear that I don't know what's going to happen on the other side? When I got divorced, I was a little afraid. I didn't know if I was going to meet someone else or spend the rest of my life
right.
alone. I grappled with that fear. I came to a point where I recognized it as an opportunity for growth for me. So I needed to let the fear of the unknown go and just accept that I was moving into a space that would at least allow me to grow further into myself.
Right.
Not spending that time would have really impeded me.
Right. I think what you're saying, I agree 100%. If you don't sit in it, you allow it to freeze you, right? And you can either choose for it to paralyze you, or you can choose to allow it to move you. And what you're talking about with the divorce, you allowed it to move you into a different space. I think there's a lot of growth in overcoming fears. And fears are a spectrum, right? I happen to live in a family, and an extended family, of OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. Talk about fears. Mm. Those fears are paralyzing. And it's interesting to watch and to read about exposure therapy to those types of fears. We're talking more of fears that we can work through that aren't quite as disabling, but they can be.
Well, and there's a similar approach there, because the exposure therapy, you know, it's meant to sort of move you past your fear. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what I'm talking about, even in a smaller way for people that don't have OCD, but grapple with common, ordinary, everyday lifetime fears. If you don't push past it and engage with it, then you're kind of missing an opportunity and stopping yourself. The same way with someone with OCD might do with an irrational fear.
Right.
We can do with rational fears.
Right.
Right. Both in terms of letting it limit us and also in identifying it and engaging with it and pushing past it.
Right.
And convincing ourselves, no, this is okay.
And I've had some recent experiences with that. I will say, when I was talking about my biggest fear is fear of missing out. And you know me, I'm a very passionate person. If it's raining outside, honestly, I was just running in the rain a few weeks ago. I want to feel it. I want all that emotion. The connection, the emotion, huge missing it. I will not miss out on that. If I love you, you know it. I mean, I believe in all that. But I do have the other type of fears that you spoke about at the beginning of the podcast, and the exposure therapy. I mean, you kind of pushed me into this one, is I have fear of public speaking. I am sitting here. I am. But I have, and you know that we have groups, and I usually defer to you immediately to, like, talk to the group or welcome them. I'll say a few little things, because I still have some of that fear. For sure. I remember growing up, and when I had to do anything in front of a class, I had hives all over my neck and face. I had fear of public speaking, but I've taken a few leadership roles recently, and you've kind of definitely not only mentored me, but pushed me, made me feel comfortable in taking those. And that exposure has helped me. And here I am, I'm speaking. But the other type of, I would say, dynamic that helps me work through those fears is I like group things that help me navigate and be able to get through that fear. Another one, Leslie Ann, karaoke. So we wanted to do karaoke as a group on a trip. And I was like, oh, I'm all in. And when it came down to it, I was not all in.
No, you were not.
And I needed the group. I needed to face that fear with other individuals singing karaoke with me. And I like the fact that we can pull in our friends to be able to help us. The other thing is, I didn't want to jump off that boat. It was a big jump. And you and other people, even though it was group, y'all singly just jumped off like no big deal. I was the last one to jump off, and I was holding hands with my cousin Holly. We eventually let go of hands. But I think with fear, if we're scared about doing something, we should talk about it, because other people have the same fear. And we can all kind of be collaborative or encouraging to each other and do it as a group.
I think that's absolutely correct.
We're doing that now. Would I be sitting here doing a podcast by myself? Listeners, I would not. It's because of this one right here and the one behind the camera. Yeah. I would not be doing this. So find partners.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, because sharing fear, right, mm-hmm. sharing your fears with other people, not only provides a support that you might need to kind of push past it. It's also, you know, going back to the OCD kind of issue, even folks that don't have full-blown OCD sometimes do have irrational fears.
Right.
We all have that moment where we're like, did I leave the stove on when I left the house? Your friends can help you figure out what's rational and yeah. irrational. Like, look, it's legitimate for you to be afraid about that. Obviously, that's something people would be afraid of. Or, Marianne, really, you don't need to be afraid about that. And I will hold your hand while you yeah. jump off the boat. So it's both the support and the feedback about whether or not what you're afraid of is real.
Right. Yeah, I've never been a fearless person, but I'm trying to fear less. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And, you know, the other thing, talking about when I was growing up, like the being introduced to those first fears in life, of course, we're parents, and so we do the same for our other kids. But I think it's so interesting that with the growth of the frontal lobe, I mean, you're looking at this 11 and 12-year-old, 13-year-old that are fearless. They're like taking all these risks because they don't have that fear. And so you do have to protect them and help them get through that.
You tell a great story about your son telling you that you were the flashy.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Yes. My son, my youngest son. And he wouldn't mind me telling you this story, but now he's in his late 20s and we do talk about it. And I ask them, like, you know, I mean, tell me about what you thought about me and things I could have done better or what you took away. And he was very honest. Mom, when I saw you, you were a flashing yellow yield sign, just a big old warning light. I knew you were going to either say, don't drink or drive. Don't be risk-taking. Wear your helmet or you're going to end up with a concussion or something worse. It was always these warnings. I hope I haven't hurt him too bad.
I think that's the hard thing as a parent, right? Because we do have a lot of fear for our kids. And you want to keep them safe, but you also don't want to coddle them so much that you inhibit their growth. And
yeah.
That is such a tricky balance. I always kind of viewed it as sort of where does the balance between risk and reward lie?
Yeah.
Are they going to be better for doing this overall and the risk is so small that we can chance it? Or is it the reverse? The risk is too big. Like you don't need to be jumping out of an airplane.
Right.
For the small reward that you would get from that. Although maybe people who jump out of airplanes think it's a great big reward. I don't know.
I still have that. And I try to work on it. I still am, I think my mindset, maybe because I'm a nurse and I've seen so much, it's kind of fatalistic in a way. Like I have friends that will take risks, like one that recently just wanted to jump out of an airplane. And I, you know, even though it was tandem, I am like, don't do that. Not at your age. Like that is risk taking. Something really bad could happen. I still have that piece that I need to work on. For sure. And even for myself, I think that piece of living a half-lived life or not being here to fully see the spectrum of my entire life, like I don't want to miss out by any means of grandkids and so forth. And so I do exercise and make good choices. You know, I do certain things because I'm so afraid that, I will miss out on things by dying early from something I could have prevented. I have to work on that because unfortunately it trickles into my family life as well. And I impose those fears like I talked to you about with my kids. I do that somewhat with my husband and my friends as well.
But I think of that as a rational fear and
yeah.
a motivating fear. And actually for women in midlife, like let's just pause on that for a moment. It's actually a good idea to let the fear of dying from something that is preventable or from becoming incapacitated from something that is preventable to motivate a healthy lifestyle in midlife. That's you should true. Be thinking about what you eat. You should be thinking about getting exercise. You should be thinking about building bone mass, you know, doing weightlifting. These are things that are really going to be beneficial in the long run. And you don't want to shave years off your life because you were lazy. Or because you didn't think about it. So the fear of later being able to not fully enjoy your life should motivate you to take action in the present. That's a great way of positively framing fear.
That's true. I don't know. There's so many things that we can talk about fear. And going back to how you talked about it initially, which is a very true piece to it, is kind of the rejection and how it does stop people. And I love the fact we recently interviewed a friend of yours, Paige Alexander, and she talked about her career path and she talked about the glass ceiling that has been broken before her. And I think we can all relate to that in some way. But I think it is important for people to face, especially women, to in history to have faced those fears, because it does allow the next generations where it's not so scary, where they can see that they can take on that challenge, that there might not be that rejection in the same way as for others, right? And so I think that all our baby steps within our home or in our friendships and is when we face our fears and like jumping off the boat. I mean, all of you did it. And would I have done it with Holly had none of you done it and actually were able to swim back to the ladder and get up with big smiles on your face? No. Mm-hmm. So I think it is important that we look at fears and we not only do it for ourselves, but for our kids as well. I mean, our kids are seeing us, or at least for me, you don't have a fear of public speaking. You did it for a living. Oh. And you're so good at it as a prosecutor.
Oh, but actually, no, I did really? At the beginning. Oh my goodness. When I first started working, and again, sorry, listeners, I think I've told this story in another context, but it relates here. When I first started working as a lawyer, mm-hmm. first started working as a prosecutor, the stress of having to be in court all day and have, look, when you're a lawyer in trial, right? All eyes are on you. Everybody's watching you. The judge is watching you. The witnesses are watching you. The jury is watching you. You're speaking. They're all watching. There's nothing else to distract them but you. And it was so incredibly stressful that I would go back to my office at the end of the day and I would shut my door and I would cry.
What?
To release all of that
anxiety
from it. And it's the fear really that's presenting mm-hmm. the anxiety. But with practice, I overcame that. And I got to a point where I couldn't have cared less. I was going to do what I was going to do. And now I can speak pretty fluently publicly without any problem. But it was, sometimes you have to practice overcoming
right. Fear.
And I was thinking about that when, in the social context, making friends, making connections. If you're someone for whom that's very difficult because you're afraid of rejection or you're afraid that you're not going to be fully accepted, mm-hmm. that's when you really actually need to push yourself out there and engage with it. It comes down to letting yourself be vulnerable.
It is.
Letting yourself be in a position where you might experience exactly what it is you're afraid of, but knowing that you can overcome that. Mm-hmm. Maybe not immediately, but eventually. And you have to keep at it.
Vulnerability is the bridge.
Vulnerability is the bridge.
You know, it truly is. When you were talking about that, wow, it comes so natural. It seems to come so natural to you. Like I babble.
You don't babble.
You tell stories. there is a difference. But, you know, when you were talking about fears in general, and we were talking about like group and getting through a fear, I think there's been several in the last, 5 years, I would say, of fears that we all feel in a group way. And it's been interesting to see how people react to it. Like the world feared together COVID. Mm-hmm. And it was so interesting to see how people reacted to that fear. Some people didn't leave their apartments. Some people just took the risks and didn't wear masks and all of that as well. Not to make this all political. I don't want that at all. But it was, there still was a comfort in knowing everyone's going through it together and learning how other people are coping with it. Mm-hmm. I was a healthcare worker, so I actually worked in it. So a different type of fear. And I was very envious of the people binging on TV and doing binging TV and all those kind of things. But yet I was in a position because I was talking to clients and people that were not doing well, unfortunately, and some that passed away, I took on fears of death of other people in a way that was extremely heavy. But yet I had my group, my cohort of individuals to be able to discuss that with. And we all had that shared experience where we were able to try not to internalize it so much. But yet we were seeing something happening, but we were expected to lessen the fears of other people in spite of our own experience. And it was very interesting.
Yeah, that's an interesting place to sit. Very much so.
Yeah.
I also think it is interesting that sometimes in the face of fear, a legitimate fear, people will delegitimize the fear. Mm-hmm. And push it aside and act completely contrary to where that fear might lead. There's something very courageous about that, but also a little foolhardy because, as we said at the beginning, fear's there for a reason. It's right. part of what has allowed humans to adapt. And just like you don't want to let an irrational fear stop you from doing something, you also don't want an irrational rejection of fear
right.
to put you in a place where you're taking a completely unnecessary risk.
Yeah,
I mean, it amazes me sometimes these extreme athletes, some of the things they'll do, and it doesn't always work out well. I mean,
right. The adrenaline. They yeah. do it for the adrenaline.
Well, an example right now is like all these people climbing Mount Everest. I think it's great that you want to climb Mount Everest, but like you really got to think about that because you are truly taking on an enormous risk.
Yeah.
To me, it's not worth it.
Right.
I guess maybe to someone else it is. But if you're conscious of that risk, you know you might die, you want to do it anyway because it's going to be the capstone of your life to do it, great. If you're going because you think, oh, there's no risk, I'm fine, I've got Sherpas to carry my bags, I'm going to be great, you're foolish.
Oblivious to
it. Yeah. So it's being conscious and really weighing the risk and understanding the risk and then acting in accordance with that risk that I think is really sort of where successfully grappling with risk blocks.
Right, right. Yeah, it can be good and bad, right?
It can. There's another piece to this, too, that I don't want to forget to talk about, and that is you said something about you used to get hives when you were public speaking.
Mm-hmm.
I know for me, I used to shake. My legs would shake. Like, yeah. literally, they felt like they were going to give out under me. That's really hard because that's involuntary.
Yeah.
And that alone can stop people from engaging in something because they don't want to risk looking foolish because they're shaking in front of a crowd or they're
yeah.
turning bright red in front of a crowd or whatever.
I shake too.
Yeah, that involuntary response can be inhibiting. But I think, again, it all comes down to being conscious of it. If you know that's how you're going to respond, and then in the moment saying to yourself, mm-hmm. oh, I feel it coming now, I can feel the hives creeping up my face, or oh, there goes my left leg shaking like a leaf, you can actually teach yourself to overcome it.
That's where the growth happens. So I think it's important to sit in discomfort too. And sometimes we shy away from the discomfort so it doesn't move us, it paralyzes us. But if we can get through that, like now I can sit here and speak. I don't see anybody, but I know people are listening. I know a lot of people are listening. And I don't have hives. And it's just what you said. It's going through that vulnerability and that discomfort and moving forward through it. I don't even know where we would be without fear in our lives because, yeah, it does stop us. But like I said, it definitely propels me to live a much fuller life.
So I think we will check in with Elizabeth and see whether she has any fears she wants to share or she's going to give us questions that are going to make us fearful.
One question is, how much of what we call fear is really just the tension between who we are and who the world told us to be?
Oh, that's such an excellent question. For me, I actually think fear is a big part of it because being who you are and going against what society is telling you to be raises a fear of isolation. And I think people are meant to be communal animals. We're meant to be in connection with others. And there is really at bottom nothing, I think. And, you know, there are plenty of psychiatrists and psychologists out there. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But this is kind of how I view it. I don't think there's any bigger fear than being alone. I think that is the capstone of fear. And so that risk, taking that risk of having an entire society reject you because you're rejecting who they tell you to be, oh, that's huge. You can push past it. And I think you find on the other side that there's actually another society that lies beyond that will accept you for who you are. But it's challenging.
I think fear definitely plays into that. You know, it's interesting because what the world tells us to be, who they tell us to be, is to conform with those around us. And to shed that fear and choose to be the person that you are innately is what has changed the world. Those are the trailblazers. They are the people that step out of that conforming mindset and they choose to be. But you have to fear less and be fearless to choose that path.
In midlife, fear often shifts from the external fear of failing, fear of missing out, to the internal, where you start to have a fear of not having lived fully. How do we begin to answer to that deeper fear of not having lived fully?
Wow, I love that question. And I'm going to say, people go onto the website American Midsters, because our little slogan is being bold and saying yes. And I think in midlife, it is the perfect time to look at those things that might have presented fear in your life in the past. It's the time to embrace it.
I would answer it a little bit differently, because I think at the bottom of that, all humans fear dying. And yet, all humans die. And so I think the answer to that lies in accepting and embracing that you are going to die. And, you know, you can't push that off forever. But then looking away from that and saying, instead of letting that fear motivate me, I'm going to die someday. How do you want to live? So flip it over on its head. Death is inevitable. So how am I going to live in the time that I have left? And that, I think, can help you make better choices about what your time, your actual limited time on this earth, is going to look like.